From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse, and I'm on the campus of UW-La Crosse, which is where our studio is, and joined today by a wonderful political science professor here on campus. It's Dr. Anthony Chergosky, who's the Assistant Professor of Political Science and Public Administration. Anthony, welcome back to Newsmakers.
Thanks, Ezra. I appreciate it.
We're talking about local politics today, and we'll get into the statewide politics, and who knows where that will lead us as well. The hour is young, so we'll go wherever the conversation takes us. But there are important races throughout Wisconsin, including the La Crosse School Board race, which is one of the things we're going to talk about. We'll go there first, Anthony. There are 8 candidates running for 4 seats on this school board, and it seems like, school board, do I really have to go out and vote for that? It's like one of the only things on the ballot. Why is a race like this more important for people to pay attention to?
The La Crosse School District has been fascinating to watch over the past couple of years. In November 2022, Ezra, we saw a proposal to consolidate from 2 high schools to 1 high school go down by a significant margin. It was about a 38-point margin of defeat. Now, that is extremely unusual when we look at school referendum ballots. We see these ballots pass at a very impressive rate. It is enormously unusual for a school referendum to fail, much less fail by a 38-point margin, roughly speaking. So the school district of La Crosse had a highly unsuccessful effort, it's safe to say, when it came to this nearly $200 million plan to go from one high school go from 2 high schools down to 1 high school and to construct a new high school. It was a high-dollar ticket item. It attracted statewide attention because of the high stakes involved. And it's safe to say that the failure of that referendum has carried over to the elections this April, and the legacy of that debate has not gone away. So we see the candidates in the school board race continuing to talk about the referendum, continuing to talk about the issue of high school consolidation. This was a pivotal moment in the history of the school district of La Crosse, and we're seeing how this pivotal moment is continuing on into the 2023 election cycle.
So it's almost like this election is a referendum on that failed referendum, nearly.
It really is, Ezra. I mean, when we look at the way that the candidates are talking, they talk in great detail about their views on the referendum, so much so that sometimes I wonder what their plan is moving forward. Now, all of the candidates do have platforms. They do have plans for how they would like to see the school district evolve over time. The school district of La Crosse is coming under enormous stress as a result of enrollment declines and as a result of stagnant funding at the state level. For those reasons, the school district of La Crosse is really at a bit of a turning point, like I said. It's really at a pivotal moment, a question of what they will do to manage these twin challenges, a lack of funding from the state and enrollment pressures. Ezra, I did the math and I found that the total number of students in the school district of La Crosse has declined by about 23% from 2001 through today. That represents a huge shift. The demographic changes in the city of La Crosse have been an enormous challenge for the school district of La Crosse. And we see an aging of the population. And frankly, we just see fewer school-age kids. And Ezra, just quickly, one could come back at this and say, well, is this a result of the open enrollment policy of the Wisconsin state government? The open enrollment policy enables people to enroll in a district other than the one in which they live. Mm-hmm. But the school district of La Crosse's analysis finds that the open enrollment policy is not what's causing this decline. They find that it really is the lower birth rate, the lower population growth. That's what's driving this decrease. You combine that, as I mentioned, with a lesser amount of state funding. And this is just a community that's under a lot of stress right now, I feel, where there is this big picture vision for the school district that the administrators have. There's a lot of debate about that, what that might look like. There's the ever-present North versus South division in the city of La Crosse. This is a point of high stress, high stakes for the city of La Crosse. And that's why there's a ton of interest, I think, in the school district of La Crosse's election in April 2023.
So you look at these eight candidates, and you talked about a lot of the issues that are kind of informing to some extent or another what the voters' feelings on this are. This is not a presidential year. There is no mayoral election in the city of La Crosse. We elected a new sheriff last time around. All of the other quote-unquote interesting stuff is kind of off the table. The Supreme Court race is a big deal, and we'll get to that later in today's program. But how does this affect people's willingness to, you know, get out of their house, take time away from work and the kids and whatever else they're doing and actually go vote?
I expect there to be impressive voter turnout in La Crosse, Ezra. In the primary elections held in February, we saw that La Crosse County exceeded the statewide voter turnout. I expect that will continue, where La Crosse County is higher than the state as a whole in terms of voter turnout. Partly that will be because of the school board race. Ezra, local government is really, really important to the people. People have opinions about local government. They experience local government. They have a different type of connection to local government than they perhaps do to the national government. Something that came up time and time again as I was reviewing the rhetoric from the candidates for the school board was a lack of trust, a lack of confidence, and a lack of communication between the school district and the people. When that kind of confidence and trust is lost, that gets people out of whack when it comes to local government and local elected officials, local administrative bodies. It gets people out of whack because people are used to trusting local government. People tend to have more trust for the local school district, for the local city government, for the local county government. They typically have more trust for those bodies than they do, say, the national government. So when trust is lost, or when there's a sense of trust being lost, then it really represents a shock to the system for people. And again, Ezra, that is something that came up time after time after time when I was listening to these candidates. They felt like there was a lack of communication surrounding these enrollment trends, surrounding the budget issues, surrounding the facilities issues, for instance, the plan to consolidate from two high schools down to one high school. Mm-hmm. They felt like there was a lack of trust, a lack of communication, and felt like there needs to be real improvement on the part of the school district. So when things are thrown out of whack in that way, the people are going to get involved. They're going to get engaged. And so this will be, I think, a pretty high turnout election here in La Crosse.
It seemed like, I was not part of these conversations. I'm obviously, I don't advise anybody on this sort of thing, but I was really surprised when they did kind of roll out the referendum that eventually failed, there wasn't a lot of supportive hoopla behind it. I would have expected to see some current or former city leaders or conspicuous people throughout the community having been sort of preemptively brought on board to the project to lend their support, maybe a press conference announcing the thing with those, you know, gathered and available for comment, and that sort of, there wasn't that sort of thing. And I because of that sort of vacuum of information, it seems like the forces against that played on, played correctly or incorrectly. I'm not making a judgment, but they played on concerns over the enormous price tag of the project, and they played on cultural concerns about anti-Northside bias. And it seems like that really carried the day. How much are, like, when you look at the candidates that are running for school board now, how much is that kind of playing into who people might support or who's running for school board?
It's a huge factor, Ezra, and this is a very different kind of school board election than we've seen around Wisconsin and around the United States. We have seen the temperature, if you will, for school board elections really increase. But that has largely been because of culture wars entering the fray in school board politics, like critical race theory, like gender identity, like issues of sexuality and what should and should not be taught in the classroom. Here in La Crosse, we have a very intense situation regarding our school board, but it's not because of those cultural issues. It's not because of those culture war issues surrounding critical race theory, gender identity, and sexuality. It is because of exactly what you said, the North Side versus the South Side, the price tag on the project, and the sense that this plan to consolidate from two high schools to one newly constructed high school was rolled out without a lot of information, without a lot of hoopla, as you put it quite nicely. Ezra, I had some insight into the development of this plan, and I saw that this plan was developed on some pretty flimsy assumptions. The plan was developed on the premise that people said that they would consider going from two high schools to one high school. When the district did its survey, they asked, would you consider going from two high school to one newly constructed high school? Look, people are open to considering lots of things. I'm open to considering lots of things that I inevitably decline to do. What they did was they maybe read a bit too much into the data that they had about public opinion, or didn't quite interpret the public opinion data correctly. That's the only conclusion to draw, given the fact that only 31% of voters ended up supporting the plan. And as we've talked about, Ezra, this plan was such a significant defeat for the school district of La Crosse that the legacy of this defeat didn't end in November of 2022. It is carried over, and it has been that damaging to the level of confidence that people have in the school district of La Crosse. So we have seen that it just wasn't a defeat that was a one-time thing. This was a defeat that I think represented some broader concerns that the community has. It opened up some wounds, perhaps, and it just created this really intense situation going into April of 23.
It'll be interesting to watch. As we mentioned, there are eight people running for four spots on the school district. You have Deb Sukla, Scott Neumeister, Trevor Sprague, Jeff Jackson, Kathy Blanchard, Jerry Wasik, and Kimberly Kreschik, and Tim Alberts. Those are the eight candidates who are running. How much do we know about these candidates? Do we want to go down the list and sort of, I mean, not a five-minute expose or something like that, but let's take at least a few of them before a timeout, and we can finish the list after our break if we run out of time. But I think we can at least give, you know, a fact or two about each of them.
Sure. So Kathy Blanchard, we can start with her. She touted her involvement in the schools. She commented on the operating referendum, which we should say is also on the April ballot. There is an operating referendum for about $60 million over the next 6 years to fund the operations of the La Crosse School District. Now, we should note that an operating referendum is different from a capital referendum. A capital referendum was what was on the ballot last November, a major capital project, in that case, to build a new high school. Operational referenda are just referendum ballot items that fund the, well, operations of the school district. And one thing that came up in the rhetoric that I was reviewing from the candidates is whether or not they supported the operational referendum, the proposed operational referendum. The practical impact of the operational referendum would be an increase in the property tax. And it would go, as I mentioned, for about 6 years, $60 million over 6 years, $58 per property tax in property taxes for a $200,000 home. And so, you know, when I looked at the rhetoric, Kathy Blanchard said that she wanted more transparency about how the money will be used. And that's something that a number of other candidates also said, Ezra. They wanted more transparency about how the $60 million will be used. The school district might want flexibility other people want details. So that was something that stood out to me when I was reviewing Kathy Blanchard's rhetoric. She also, as I should mention, ran for mayor of La Crosse in the last election cycle that the mayor of La Crosse was on the ballot. She's back running for school board in this election.
She's not the only sort of non-newcomer.
Yep.
On the list, Scott Neumeister is running for school board. He's currently on the city council and will be vacating that position in order to run for the school board, right?
Quite interesting to see how there have been some familiar faces in this campaign,
yeah.
Ezra. Yeah, I think it represents the high stakes of this campaign, that you would have people who are pretty well known within the community. You would have people who are well-established political figures within the community wanting this seat, wanting to take a shot at this seat, even if the odds are, you know, maybe not as sound as some elected officials or some political candidates might like. I mean, you are in what was a field of nine going for a four-person body, or where four people would be elected out of an initial field of nine. So Scott Neumeister, to me, just highlights that you have pretty established folks in the political scene here who want the job on the school board, really, again, emphasizing how important this role is perceived to be.
And I don't know if this is like the only reason that he's running. I haven't talked to him about that. But it's kind of highlights that cultural divide that you were talking about, because he is a Logan graduate and owns a business on the north side, and you know, very much raises those concerns with his presence on the city council.
Yeah, that north side versus south side distinction, yeah, is unique to La Crosse. Certainly regional divides in general are not unique to the politics of any locality, but the north side versus south side distinction came up time and time again in the politics of that referendum in November to consolidate from two high schools, one on the south side, one on the north side, to one high school, which would have been located on the south side.
You are explaining my entire psychology, Anthony, because my parents graduated from opposite high schools.
Well, it's an inspirational tale,
Ezra, is, right?
Of bridging the regional,
yeah,
divide.
Yeah, right. So what about some of these other candidates? What do we know about, for example, Deb Sukla?
Yeah, she has 17 years of experience on the school board and felt that things were going well when she left the school board, but feels that trust and transparency have declined. And that motivates her to make an attempt to return to the school board. Now, she points to her experience working on policy as a reason she should be elected. And I mentioned Kathy Blanchard's critique of the lack of transparency about how the $60 million would be used. That is very much what Deb Sukla said about the operational referendum. She says that she supports operating referendums in general, but had some concerns about this one in particular. She certainly touts her 17 years of experience as her calling card for the position of school board member.
And that sounds, reading between the lines, I don't know if she said it explicitly or not, but it sounds like I got off the school board and things were going great, and then this referendum happened, and here I am again.
That is exactly what I got reading between,
okay,
the lines as well, yes.
Okay. Another candidate is Trevor Sprague.
Yes. He talks about how our system of K-12 education feeds into our system of higher education, and he touts his teaching experience in higher education. Obviously, that's an important perspective to have on the school board, someone who understands the synergy, if you will, between K-12 and higher education. Now, he talked about the operating referendum and said that it is a necessity given the lack of state funding, and that is consistent with the school district's message that, look, we may not want to do this operating referendum, but given the lack of state funding and given the budget deficit that we face, it's something that has to be done. So he was on board with the operating referendum.
There are four more candidates. We're halfway through the list. Our conversation with Dr. Anthony Chergosky continues in just a moment. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. We're visiting today with Anthony Chergosky, who's an assistant professor of political science at UWL. And Anthony, we talked about four of the candidates for the City of La Crosse school board race that is coming up in April. Let's continue through the list so that people have just at least a brief snapshot of each of these candidates. So where do you want to start next?
Yeah, we can go next to Tim Alberts, who talked about the mistrust between the community and the school board in some of his campaign rhetoric. He acknowledged in his comments that state funding has been lacking for public schools, but as with other candidates, when it comes to the $60 million operating referendum that is proposed for the school district of La Crosse, he criticized the transparency about where the money with the operating referendum will be used, and he feels that the community lacks an understanding of where the money is going, feeling that there is more communication that is needed between the school board and the community. As with most other, or if not all other, candidates for the school board, he felt that operating referendums are necessary in theory, but it's important to provide that level of transparency. I think, Ezra, when I was big picture looking at the rhetoric that the candidates were using about the operating referendum, they all seemed to be on board with the general idea of an operating referendum, acknowledging that the school district has these enrollment challenges, it has funding challenges owing to the way that the state has funded public education. The real difference between the candidates was if they felt that voters could vote yes confidently on the operating referendum, or if they felt some unease about the level of detail that had been provided.
I don't want to distract from our opportunity to learn at least a little bit about the three remaining candidates. But while we're talking about that sort of statement about trust, the statement about, you know, in theory, believing in operating referenda as a theoretical necessity, but in specific terms, wanting more information about this particular one, with so many candidates saying that, not that they're being disingenuous, but if everybody is saying the same thing, like you can't, it's hard to use that as a point of differentiation between the candidates.
It is, Ezra. It is. And to me, it just highlights the fact that operating referenda are pretty much a slam dunk in Wisconsin politics. All of the candidates basically had the same general point of view about operating referenda. They said that given the way that the state has funded public education, operating referenda are a necessity. They are a fact of life in Wisconsin. And we know, Ezra, that these pass at overwhelming rates when you look around the state. But when you dig into the details, that is where some differences emerge between the candidates. Again, there's kind of those two camps that I mentioned. The first camp that says, go ahead and vote yes on this. We've got to have it. We've got to have the operating referendum. The other camp saying, I'm for this in theory, maybe not in practice.
Yeah. Well, the three remaining candidates, Jeff Jackson, Jerry Wasik, and Kimberly Kreshek. Let's talk about Kimberly Kreshek.
Yeah, Kimberly Kreshek is making a return bid for the School District of La Crosse school board. And she, again, in kind of some of her rhetoric, has criticized the consolidation of high schools. And Ezra, we've mentioned how that continues to be an issue in this campaign. She talked about how La Crosse is spread out to the extent that it's just simply not feasible to have one high school. Now, even though the school district may have moved beyond that one idea, it still is a ripe target for these candidates to go after that idea of consolidation and to use the lingering resentment, if you will. I don't think that's too strong of a word, resentment, about the plan to consolidate high schools as a campaign tactic.
What about Jerry Wasik?
Yeah, Jerry Wasik has recently moved to the La Crosse area. Recent meaning, like within the last decade or so. He was one of the more enthusiastic supporters of the operating referendum that I caught. He talked about the need to have arts education, music education, mental health support, some of the things that the school district is really touting as the benefits of the operating referendum. And so he really emphasized that there is this gap between the state funding and what we need locally to fund our schools adequately in lacrosse. And so he really stood out to me as an enthusiastic supporter of the operating referendum, where other candidates weren't so enthusiastic.
And the last candidate that we have to learn about is Jeff Jackson.
Interesting candidate because he emphasizes his background in business and really believes that his background in business can be an asset to the school board. Like others, he supports the operational referendum, citing the gap between state funding and district funding, the gap between what the state is providing and what the district needs. He pointed out the necessity of maintaining buildings, including the aging infrastructure that is a significant problem for the school district of La Crosse. I mean, you have declining enrollment. You don't necessarily have declining infrastructure costs. You don't have, if anything, the infrastructure costs are escalating as the buildings continue to age, as they continue to have problems. And he also talked about the importance of paying staff and teachers. We talk so much these days, Ezra, about the teacher shortage and how important it is for school districts to offer a competitive wage, given the lack of teachers out there and given the intense competition between districts to attract talent. It used to be the case, and I've talked to Aaron Engel, the superintendent, about this. It used to be the case that you could get a couple hundred applicants for an elementary school posting. Now you get a few applicants for an elementary school posting. And it just represents the sea change in the job market for educators and how there is a real shortage and how school districts are really battling to provide competitive compensation. And so that's something that Jeff Jackson really focused on in the rhetoric that I reviewed from him.
In La Crosse, the school board, the mayor, you know, some of the other races, as well as the Supreme Court race we're going to be talking about later, these are nonpartisan races, officially. Often in the school board, you'll see cohorts of candidates running together. I think in the last election where there was a school board election, I remember a group of three candidates running together and very much using sort of left-leaning dog whistles, and a group of three candidates running together using very much right-leaning dog whistles. Do we see that in this race?
Not in my view to the extent that we did last time.
Okay.
Certainly there are groupings of candidates. Certainly there are ways to categorize these candidates. But Ezra, you are right. The last school board election in La Crosse and school board elections around Wisconsin, around America, have in many ways become de facto battles between the two political parties.
Mm-hmm.
And that represents a real trend where the political parties are getting involved in every race possible that they can get involved with. I don't quite see that to the same extent in this race. There are ways to categorize these candidates, but it is a real concern for me because, you know, we think about the issues at play in school boards and you wonder how well they really do overlap with partisan politics, right? Like how well the political parties really reflect what happens on a school board. Certainly, as we've talked about in the school district of La Crosse, there are these very unique local issues, these local issues that are not present in other communities, or if they are present in other communities, they're just present in different ways. Declining enrollment, changing demographics. In the city of La Crosse, we have seen a lack of population growth for many decades now, and that's causing the school district to come under enormous stress. Combine that with the state funding situation, and I just feel like there's a lot of tension in the community surrounding the school district. Of course, all of that coming on top of the failed referendum in November to consolidate high schools. There's tension because of the stresses, demographic-wise, budget-wise, and in other situations, tension, stresses facing this community.
Well, the school board is what we've been primarily talking about, but there are other issues on the ballot. We're going to talk about the state Supreme Court race between Daniel Kelly and Janet Protasiewicz coming up in the third segment of the show. But there are ballot measures that are up for people's approval or disapproval. We've talked about the school district referendum for operating funds. Another one in La Crosse County, before we get to the statewide ones, there's a La Crosse County abortion ban referendum, basically saying should the Wisconsin, so it's non-binding, it says should the Wisconsin legislature repeal or keep the 1849 abortion law.
That's exactly right, Ezra. So the La Crosse County Board decided to put a what we call an advisory referendum on the ballot regarding the 1849 ban on abortion in Wisconsin. When Roe versus Wade was overturned in the previous summer, we saw that Wisconsin reverted to the 1849 ban on abortion. The 1849 ban on abortion only provides for abortion in cases where it's needed to preserve the life of the mother. There are no other exceptions. And so clearly the La Crosse County Board has put this on the ballot for strategic reasons. Mm-hmm. That is the case for all advisory referendum. Now, some will say that the strategy is to make a point that the legislature isn't listening and that this is to make a point about public opinion. This is to give people a sense of public opinion. And there's something to that as a measure of public opinion. There is something to that. Others would say that this is to juice voter turnout, to get people to come out to vote. Now, I'm not going to take sides about mm-hmm. the motivations, but I will just note that there are differing interpretations of the motives that might be at play when we do these advisory referenda, which, as I should note, Ezra, have no effect on the law.
Right.
They are purely to just judge public opinion. And that can be a useful exercise. I certainly think that more public opinion data is better than less public opinion data.
Right.
However, we might also, again, wonder about why exactly these different advisory referenda are on the ballot. We could say the same for the statewide advisory referenda, which asks if able-bodied, childless adults should be required to look for work in order to receive taxpayer-funded welfare benefits. Now, yeah. Again, we could say that that is to measure public opinion on a matter of public interest. We could also say that that was an effort by the Republican-controlled state legislature to motivate its base. Differing interpretations, for sure.
Well, if you look at the language of each, it certainly, as you said, could support the idea that there is specific strategy behind, because you're using, in the statewide referendum, you're using buzzwords about able-bodied adults required to look for work, taxpayer-funded welfare benefits, those kinds of things. In the La Crosse County referendum, you've got the specific, like, the question could exist without any additional information. Should the Wisconsin legislature keep the 1849 law or repeal it? Instead, you have additional information. It says keep or repeal the state's 1849 abortion ban that provides no exceptions in cases of rape or incest in order to protect the health of the mother. So you have that very specific thing pointed out using that language that seems to push the button of a particular side of that discussion.
You are quite right. Now, I am skeptical that any of this will have an effect on voter turnout. To me, that's the big question here. Will any of this affect voter turnout? Will the statewide referendum on able-bodied childless adults be required to look for work in exchange for taxpayer-funded welfare benefits? I don't think that that's going to be a major motivator on the conservative side for turning out to vote. I'm not quite as sure about the county referendum, because abortion is really the key issue in what we're going to talk about later in the show, the state Supreme Court race. Abortion is the number one issue in that campaign. And so you could say that there is a bit of an overlap between, on the one hand, abortion being the key issue in the state Supreme Court race. On the other hand, this referendum in La Crosse County to have a vote on if the abortion ban should remain in place. So you've got kind of things reinforcing one another there. So there, I think that there could be some effect, because you've got one race between Protasiewicz and Kelly that really is about abortion. You've got another about the non-binding referendum in the county about abortion. And so that could have some kind of reinforcing effect, perhaps.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I'm rather skeptical that any of this will make a big difference. The big time player is going to be the state Supreme Court election. That is the headliner. everything else is the undercard. And so I think that whatever happens, whatever our analysis of this election will be, we will need to start with the state Supreme Court election and go from there.
And we will do that after we take a quick time out here on Newsmakers. You're listening to my conversation today with Anthony Chergosky, who's the Assistant Professor of Political Science and Public Administration at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. Of course, I'm Ezra Wall. You can find archived episodes of our show, or if you missed part of this conversation, you can listen back to it by going to WPR.org/newsmakers. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. Our conversation continues in just a moment on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall, and we're talking to Dr. Anthony Chergosky from UWL. We're talking about the election that's coming up on Tuesday, April the 4th. Very interesting local races, important ballot initiatives as well, but the pièce de resistance, so to speak, is the state Supreme Court race between Daniel Kelly and Janet Protasiewicz. This is like one of the most expensive races in terms of advertising dollars that we've ever seen. Why is this race so important? It's a nonpartisan race technically, and yet Democrats and Republicans both sinking millions and millions of dollars into the advertising for this race.
Yes, Ezra, we have already shattered the existing record for the most expensive judicial election in American history. Previously, that record was $15 million. It was set in Illinois in 2004 in a state Supreme Court election there. We have shattered that election. We've got a couple weeks left to build on that record that Wisconsin has set for this particular election. And then the question is why? Well, I don't think we've seen a state Supreme Court election quite like this one. First, we know that Wisconsin seems to just tend to be the center of the political universe a lot of the time. So that's one factor. Secondly, we have abortion very much on the ballot in this election. I don't think it's too much of a leap to say that abortion is on the ballot. That is to say, the fate of the Wisconsin 1849 abortion ban. If the control of the Wisconsin State Supreme Court flips from a 4-3 conservative majority to a 4-3 liberal majority, it is fair to say that the 1849 abortion ban is going to go away and that something.
So it could be struck down by the court.
Absolutely. Okay. And that is why, if we're thinking big picture about the structure of the court, this race matters so much. Currently, we have a 4-3 conservative majority on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. But Pat Rogensack, who is a conservative judge, is retiring, opening up a conservative seat and opening up the possibility for the liberals to take control of the balance of power on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. That is why Democrats are so excited about this race. They view it as their chance to undo the 1849 abortion ban. Oh yeah, they're also concerned about gerrymandering and the 2024 presidential election as well. I don't think we've had an election quite like this ever in judicial politics, where you've got the pivotal seat on the state Supreme Court up for grabs. And it's a really important seat because the state Supreme Court is likely to consider so many important issues: abortion, gerrymandering, the election of 2024, and related issues of voting laws, election administration. So much that the state Supreme Court gets involved with, no question, this is the headliner, not just of the Wisconsin April 2023 ballot. This is viewed as the most important election in the United States in 2023.
Historically, candidates for judicial seats have avoided giving specific information about how they would rule on certain issues. How can they telegraph to their potential supporters that they are indeed on, quote unquote, their side of any given issue, given the tradition of not promising a particular ruling in advance?
Janet Protasiewicz has taken a fascinating strategy on this very question, Ezra. She has said that she will tell voters her values. She will not, according to her, say how she will rule on a case. But she says that, look, we all have values, and so we should be honest, according to her, as candidates about the values that they have. And so she has said that she supports a woman's right to make their decisions regarding reproduction and reproductive issues. She also has referred to the legislative maps in the Wisconsin state legislature as rigged. And so she has been very, very much in a signaling mode about where she would rule on issues of gerrymandering and abortion. And we know that those are the top two issues to Democratic Party voters. So Janet Protasiewicz has made no secret to Democrats about where she would stand on those issues. Dan Kelly, meanwhile, talks in general terms about the Constitution, and he brands himself as a constitutional conservative. He's almost professorial in the tone that he uses. And you know, as a professor, I may consider myself professorial at times. Dan Kelly is someone who kind of speaks in these terms, that in these ways that you might find in a classroom here at UWL, certainly about different topics, but the style I'm talking about, the way that he talks, the mode of rhetoric that he uses, is very different than the issue-based rhetoric of Janet Protasiewicz. Now, Dan Kelly has been criticized for a couple reasons in this campaign. He has been criticized for not raising much money. He is relying on outside money, including from the very powerful Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, the pro-business group in Wisconsin, to fund advertisements on his behalf. He's also relying on money from Dick Uihlein, a Republican mega donor, to fund his campaign ads. And so Dan Kelly's campaign itself has not really spent much money on radio or TV ads. He's relying on these outside groups. Meanwhile, Janet Protasiewicz has vastly outraised Dan Kelly and is blanketing the airwaves with attacks on Dan Kelly. Interestingly, Ezra, it was long assumed that the Kelly campaign would go after Protasiewicz on crime. Protasiewicz is going after Dan Kelly on crime.
Really?
Trying to flip the script.
Okay.
And so I think the strategy from Protasiewicz is to fight to a draw on the issue of crime. You know, she's facing attacks on crime. She's dishing out attacks on crime. Mm-hmm. I think her goal is to have voters sort of throw up their hands and say, ah, it's a wash between the two candidates on crime. And then to have voters focus on the issue of abortion, where public opinion data shows that the 1849 abortion ban is deeply unpopular with the public. And I think Protasiewicz really wants to focus attention in that direction to take the issue of crime away from Dan Kelly to focus voters' attention elsewhere.
And Protasiewicz is currently a judge in Milwaukee, right? In the Milwaukee
Correct.
Area. And Dan Kelly is formerly a Wisconsin Supreme Court justice.
That's exactly right. And Dan Kelly lost his bid for re-election in 2020. Now, he would say that that's because there was a Democratic presidential primary on the ballot drawing Democratic voters to the polls. He did lose by a double-digit margin in 2020. And so some of his detractors in the primary election this time around said, look, he lost big time last time. Why should we trust him again? But he was able to get through the primary in that conservative lane, running against Jennifer Duro, who was a judge, again, in the Milwaukee area, but couldn't overcome Kelly's strength outside of the Milwaukee area. It was just a fascinating divide within the Republican Party, Ezra. You saw Dan Kelly do really well in everywhere but Milwaukee, and that was enough to give him the victory in that conservative lane to advance as a top two candidate in the primary to go to the April election.
And I know the other candidates are already out of the race, but Jennifer Duro was fairly unknown in Wisconsin to the average voter until everybody saw her on television when she was the judge presiding over that horrible case involving the parade murders in Waukesha.
Exactly. And it lifted her to a strong vote margin in that part of the state. Mm-hmm. The big question was if she would have appeal beyond the Waukesha area, beyond that region of the state. She did not have enough appeal beyond that part of the state. Dan Kelly, using his conservative credentials, his conservative message, to build that Trump-style coalition. We know that, for example, Donald Trump has been unpopular in the suburbs of Milwaukee and very popular in the rural parts of Wisconsin. You look at how Duro and Kelly turned out in their vote for the primary election, it looked a heck of a lot like that Trump coalition that Dan Kelly was building in terms of his strength in rural parts of the state, the strength that he had in areas outside of the suburbs of Milwaukee that for years, Ezra, have been the heart and soul of the Republican Party. So areas like ours in western Wisconsin have taken on a new significance in Republican politics here in Wisconsin because the balance of power has really shifted away from the suburbs of Milwaukee, again, which used to be the heart and soul of conservative politics here, and they have shifted towards the statewide scene in general.
Tell me if I'm wrong. There, when I was growing up in Wisconsin, the rural Wisconsin voter was perceived as being more of the populist voter. And at that time, those populist voters were supporting a lot of Democratic candidates, very much pro-union, those kinds of working class concerns. It seems like as this sort of advancement of this like culture wars, these battles over people's perception of what they consider to be moral issues, things like that, those populist voters have shifted their concerns from things that aligned with Democratic candidates to things that have aligned with very conservative Republican candidates.
Absolutely. Trump-style politics, the culture wars, have really brought rural Wisconsin into the fold of the Republican Party. Now, that's going to be really interesting to watch as we go towards April and the state Supreme Court election. The key question for Dan Kelly is if he can run up massive margins, just massive margins in rural Wisconsin, because that is exactly what he's going to need. For Janet Protasiewicz, meanwhile, we have seen the Democratic Party double and triple down on its urban base. So, for example, Dane County. I'm watching Dane County perhaps more than any other county in analyzing the results, just fast-forwarding myself to election night now. When I'm going to be reviewing election night results, I'm going to be watching Dane County more than any other county because Dane County is the fastest-growing part of Wisconsin. And just as it grows in population, it seems to always grow in the margin of victory that it provides for the Democratic candidate. Of course, Milwaukee is going to be interesting to watch as well because that is where Janet Protasiewicz has been a judge. And then these pockets of blue elsewhere in the state, including La Crosse. Mm-hmm. Can Janet Protasiewicz overperform in La Crosse? Can she run up a huge margin in Dane County? Can she run up a huge margin in Milwaukee? And can she hold her own in some of those old school Democratic enclaves, like you mentioned, Ezra? That will be the key to watch there. For Dan Kelly, it's all about that rural base. Can the rural base, will the rural base turn out? And will he get enough out of those key Milwaukee suburbs to survive?
Do you see the in the La Crosse area, throughout our listening area in southwestern Wisconsin, do you see that same dichotomy that you do in other parts of the state where like the actual city of La Crosse or maybe even Metro La Crosse, if you can refer to it that way, is leaning more to the left? And then the rural outposts surrounding the city proper would lean farther to the right?
The answer, Ezra, is yes, but candidates still matter.
Okay.
So in presidential elections, we have absolutely seen that rural urban polarization in the La Crosse region in western Wisconsin, in, for example, the Clinton versus Trump race, in, for example, the Trump versus Biden race. We saw that urban-rural divide open up in the western Wisconsin region, just as we saw it open up in the rest of Wisconsin, just as we saw it in the rest of the nation. So that urban-rural divide is very much present in western Wisconsin. But candidates matter. There are some candidates that seem to break through that urban-rural divide and overperform in some of these more rural parts of our area, some of these more sparsely populated elements of our area. And I'm thinking of Governor Evers here. Governor Evers did fairly well in some areas where Democrats have started to struggle. He turned things around in a sense for Democrats. And if Janet Protasiewicz can essentially replicate the Evers coalition, then she will probably be able to win this election.
Very interesting. And it'll be even more interesting to watch what happens on Tuesday, April the 4th, which is Election Day. So everybody get out and vote or get that absentee ballot in, whatever you're going to do before Tuesday, April the 4th, which is Election Day, when we will then know the outcomes. And of course, you know, you don't make predictions on the air, Anthony, but I'll get you to handicap these races when we're done, and we'll compare notes after. Anthony Chergosky is Assistant Professor of Political Science and Public Administration at the University of Wisconsin La Crosse. Anthony, thanks a lot for being on Newsmakers today.
Thank you, Ezra.
I'm Ezra Wall. This is Newsmakers. Our producer is Kate Spranger. If you missed part of this show you'd like to catch again, you can find it online at wpr.org/newsmakers. Of course, there's a few times each week to catch our show. We're on Friday morning at 10 on the Ideas Network 90.3. We're on Friday night at 7 on NPR News and Music 88.9. And we are always online at wpr.org/newsmakers. Join us next week for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Mm-hmm.